Welcome to the Offshore Wind Podcast, hosted by Stuart Mullen and David Lenti. Offshore wind is one of the world's fastest growing energy sources, with strong year-on-year growth expected across the next few decades. Many nations are banking on offshore wind to play a major role in reaching their net zero and sustainability targets and helping their economies recover from the COVID-19 crisis. On the technology front, turbines are bigger and more powerful than ever. Offshore wind farm capacity factors continue to rise, and we're seeing a surge of interest from oil and gas giants seeking to transition their businesses away from fossil fuels, as well as increased competition from the developers who have championed offshore wind from day one. New markets in Asia, the Americas, and eventually Africa, accelerated growth in Europe, the rise of floating offshore wind, and increasing interest in power-to-X and green hydrogen solutions are creating the basis for offshore wind to power the global energy transition. The Offshore Wind Podcast series looks at the issues facing the offshore wind industry today and tomorrow.
Hello, listeners. Stuart Mullen here, Chief Operating Officer for the Global Wind Energy Council, and welcome to the Offshore Wind Podcast. Anyway, I'm joined at the desk, as always, by Mr. David Lenti, the Head of Offshore Corporate Affairs for Siemens Gamesa. How are you doing, David?
I'm pretty well there, Stuart. It's been an interesting first couple of months here for me entering the world of podcasting. And as always, I'm super, super happy to be joining you.
And thanks. And so I think that, you know, this is a bonus episode for our listeners. So it's just David and I. We don't have any guests today. So we're just going to take the listeners through, I guess, what we've seen happen over the first part of the year. I mean, particularly, I'd be very much interested in hearing from you, David, about, you know, what has Siemens Gamesa achieved in the offshore wind space in the first part of, or, you know, the first half of 2021, also despite all of the COVID lockdowns and everything. And then maybe also we take a look at some of the, you know, how we see the markets developing and what's sort of needed to accelerate offshore wind in the back half of the year. And then maybe we can wrap it all up by having a look at some of the, you know, the first six episodes that we have in the can, so to speak. Got to get up with the lingo. Yeah. So, yeah. David, so again, if we look at for what Siemens Gamesa has achieved so far in the first half of 2021, what's been the biggest thing that you guys have done?
One of the biggest highlights for us is the installation, the very successful installation of the Danish Kriegers Flak project. So in Denmark, where both you and I are based, we installed a total of 72 wind turbines safely, efficiently, quickly. We had a very, very successful campaign for our customer Vattenfall. And I would like to really draw the attention to the way in which everything worked well. I mean, obviously there's hiccups along the way, and not everything is completely perfect, but in general, we had a very successful campaign. We had a very, very, very strong collaboration, not only with internally in the company, which one would expect and is always wonderful, but also with our customer and with the port of Rønne, or on the island of Bornholm, which we use as the staging area and dispatch area. So in general, a really smooth and excellent project that is contributing another 600 megawatts of capacity to the Danish grid that we're very, very, very happy for.
Yeah, well, congratulations on getting that project installed in such record time and great conditions. And I guess that, you know, it takes a lot of people to be able to, you know, and a lot of people well versed in the skills that they bring in offshore wind to be able to do that. And also congratulations on the utilization of the port of Bornholm. I mean, we've had a look at some of the ports, you know, and the economic value that they generate and the different stages of port development. And I guess it's fair to say that the port of Rønne is still in its, I guess, infancy in terms, I think this is the first loadout that they've done of any wind park. And I know that they're going to be continually, or, you know, hope to get high utilization of the port moving forward. I was actually at the port in, I guess it was June last year or maybe later last year, and it was just before, prior, they were just preparing for all of the Siemens Gamesa turbines to arrive, and it was really fantastic to see like a port in transformation, where you can see that, you know, the locals were getting excited when you go into a local coffee shop and people are talking about activity in the port, and this is something that hadn't happened in the port for some years. And I think that, you know, like if you ever need an example of, you know, the economic benefit that offshore wind brings, just go to a local community that's just ahead of them getting offshore wind or getting some sort of like part of the supply chain for offshore wind. And I know that, you know, like again, in the installation, you know, the installation ports, you know, the marshalling harbours, they come and go. You know, sometimes you need a marshalling harbour here, sometimes you need it there. But right. I think that, right. you know, like the service jobs tend to remain. And that's, I think those are, it's really important that, you know, like that if that ports can then look to build out, you know, other parts of the infrastructure and say, okay, look, we've got this marshalling harbour, but there's also a great opportunity in some cases for to do service out of there as well.
Very much so. So as we know in the industry, and I'm sure we're preaching to the choir on this, but one thing is the amount of jobs and economic activity that's generated during the startup or during the installation phases compared to, yes, the long-term, stable, solid employment that is created from the service agreements. So whether it's a 15 or 20 or 25 year service agreement, those are jobs that need to be filled every day, 7 days a week, you know, 365 days a year, because the machines need to be monitored, they need to be maintained, they need to, you know, to be made sure that they're producing electricity and thus revenue for the customer. And in the end, that is a very, very stable and good way in which to keep the economy rolling and at the same time avoid CO2 emissions that would be generated from fossil fuel generation.
Yeah, I guess you also had some success in the US this year. Was it that early this year or was that late last year where you installed the turbines down there? I guess it was at least they're in the water now.
Correct. So we do have the two turbine projects called the Coastal Virginia Offshore Wind Demonstration Project. So they are 2 6-megawatt Siemens Gamesa offshore direct drive machines that are installed, a 12-megawatt project in total. That was the first installation in U.S. federal waters. So yes, that also went according to plan and are generating electricity for the customers there.
Yeah, and so, I also know that you've got some steel in the water in Taiwan. Perhaps not that was before this year, but I guess you've got steel in the water in Taiwan. So, and you've, you know, creating economic benefit there as well. I guess that it must be really exciting for you, you know, sitting here in Denmark, seeing offshore wind being exported around the globe. I know it's 24/7. Your job becomes 24/7 now, so there's no right. rest for some people anymore. But I mean, it must be really exciting to be able to see and engage with, you know, countries around the globe to have offshore wind actually start to thrive in these markets.
It genuinely is. So if we, again, we go back towards Taiwan, we have the Formosa 1 and the Formosa 2 projects, so totaling 128 megawatts in total, fully installed, fully operational. And again, very, very interesting and different challenges that have arisen in working in a different environment. In one of our episodes that you and I did earlier, when we spoke with Jakob Lau-Holst from the GWO, he mentions the different characteristics and environmental conditions in Taiwan, and one of which being the ambient temperatures, which for us as an industry and as an OEM, we needed to learn to adapt to. So during the installations in these extremely high temperatures that you have in Taiwan in the summertime, that you simply don't have in the North Sea at any time. Yep. So, and then of course the water temperatures and the difference in salinity and so on have also required a bunch of different adaptations and so on. And yes, we do have material in the water. We do have installations ongoing for the Yunlin project in Taiwan.
Yeah. Okay. But if we look ahead now to some of the other markets that are, I guess, maybe emerging, or where you see that, you know, a lot of activity is going to come for Siemens Gamesa in the next, well, 6 months up until, you know, even if we look 5 years ahead, you know, where do you see the market and what's kind of interest for you guys?
So, and I know looking from a global perspective, obviously, Northwestern Europe remains an extremely important, if not the dominant area right now. The UK will remain and does remain the number one market on a global level. long-term perspective, we see the U.S. taking off even more, with potential for it becoming the second most important market globally. You know, the Biden administration, as pretty much everybody should know by now, has announced the targets of 30 gigawatts installed by 2030, which is an absolutely massive, massive investment and incredibly high goals. If they want to get it done, we're certain that they can get it done. We, of course, as Siemens Gamesa, very, very much want to be a major part of this, and the machines that get installed in the water there safely and efficiently. We also, of course, see the massive, massive growth that is projected for APAC. And I know some of your numbers, Stuart, that you also have put together show APAC exceeding the growth in Europe by 2050. And I believe we can talk about that in a little bit if you wish.
Yeah, sure. We can do. Yeah, I think that we have done some prognosis based on the International Energy Agency and IRENA's. Like, we've done some forecasting based on where we see these numbers, and we've tried to look at the market potential for various markets versus the rollout. And we see that, you know, Europe is still going to be strong. I think that there was 640 gigawatts, I think, earmarked for Europe and European waters, and I think that, but it was I think it was like 760 gigawatts earmarked for the APAC region in the same time frame. So 120 more gigawatts of potential. You know, again, there's a long way between these from the technical potential and these targets to actually being in the water. But I mean, if we are going to reach net zero, and we're going to keep the climate from this 1.5 degrees, these are the targets, these are the figures that we actually need to develop. So I think that, you know, again, they, when you look at our baseline where we are today, having, you know, I think the IEA mentioned, they just looked at the breakdown of the figures, what they needed over the course of between now and 2050, and they said, okay, 80 gigawatts a year is what's needed to be installed year after year. But again, it's not a linear process. We're not going to have 80 gigawatts a year. And if you look at, I think, the first, you know, the next 5 years, there's going to be nowhere close to 80 gigawatts being installed in that time frame. If you look at, and I guess, you know, we're seeing sort of like the auctions now opening up for, you know, Q1 and Q2 in 22. But those projects will be, the earliest of those projects will be installed in 2025, maybe. This is if we don't meet any delays, or we don't have, you know, if this is just smooth sailing. And if one thing we know about offshore wind, there's been very few markets where the trajectory has just been linear and just, you know, the takeoff. There's always something that we don't anticipate that we have to, you know, that either causes even a 6 month delay where we, you know, get our ducks in the row and then go back into this and that. But these 6 month delays, we don't have time for that now. So we need to, as an industry, and we've spoken about this, it's kind of been a theme for the podcast, we need to, as an industry, really work on the policy and making sure that we actually adopt the best standards, and that we provide the technical assistance to countries looking to do offshore wind that maybe don't have any skill set in that area today. We need to provide the technical assistance from all of these decades learnt from doing offshore wind, and also the lessons learnt that we've done more recently in the US or in Taiwan, etc. I think that this is what we really need to drill down on.
I fully agree. And just also to give some perspective as to the amount of gigawatts we're talking about right now. So you talked about 80 gigawatts a year would be necessary. In total, absolutely everything that's ever been installed over literally the last 30 years is only 35 gigawatts.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Obviously, the technology was different. You know, the world's first wind park, which we as Siemens Gamesa were part of the pioneering partners in establishing that in 1991, it was 4.95 megawatts.
Yep.
For the entire park. And yeah, it was 11 450 kilowatt machines. Now, you know, the smallest machine, I guess, I don't even know what the smallest one would be right now. It's so far ago. I mean, 6 megawatts, which we did install in the U.S., but even that is a pilot project. So selling a 14-megawatt machine like we have now with the SG14 222DD is, three times the size of the original park itself. One machine.
And yeah.
We don't sell just one machine usually.
Well, I think, again, the oldest park in operation still is this Tuno Knob, and that was like a 10 500 kilowatt turbines that are, mm-hmm. you know, that's, I mean, now you've got one turbine that produces three times the output of that entire wind park. I mean, that's just crazy. It's crazy to think. And, but it's going to, that's what's needed as well. But I think that, again, you know, I just doing some of the math behind this about what we need. And if we have like, you know, three or four, OEMs in this market, each OEM is going to need to produce, you know, if you divide the turbines equally amongst the OEMs, three or four OEMs are going to have be producing like 1,000 turbines a year, year on year, between, you know, every year between now and 2050 to be able to get these things. And that means, you know, all of these, you know, we need to have more vessels, more, you know, I mean, just that it's the whole industry just really needs to ramp up and you know, really, I guess, get fit to fight for the next
grow,
years.
Grow exponentially and safely the whole way through.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, yeah, you're talking about that as a very pleasant, common split of, you know, 25, 25, 25, 25,
yeah.
which I don't think many OEMs are interested in divvying everything up completely fairly and evenly. Obviously, you know, as competitors, we want to win, and we want our machines to be seen as the best machines and providing the best solution for our customers.
Sure, yeah, I get that, but I mean, again, you know, even if you got double, if Siemens maintained their market share, I mean, of that 50% or over 50% of the market share, I think that, you know, that's 2,000 turbines a year for Siemens. That's a lot of Siemens Gamesa I fall into the trap habit all the time of abbreviating Siemens to Siemens Gamesa. Sorry,
we'll work on that, Stuart.
Yeah, yeah, good. Yeah, we've got
another
the
5-6 episodes.
Yeah, exactly. I'll get it right one of these days. Hey, but look, let's reflect on the first six episodes.
Yes.
We've had some pretty interesting guests. Who's caught your attention the most in this?
I mean, they've all been absolutely fascinating, and I've been really genuinely happy to have every single one of them on. So I guess if we take it chronologically, we started with Caroline Kaz Morrison, who was the offshore service technician during the blade repairs.
Yeah, she's awesome.
She was really great. So just her skill and her knowledge and her openness in describing the challenges as well as the really genuinely cool stuff about working in blade repair and working offshore and everything about it absolutely fascinated me, and I really, really liked what the insight that she was able to provide to us.
Yeah, me too. And I liked that she was so down to earth for a job that is, you know, from the outside, it looks so dangerous, you know, and you look at all of the different things and she's like, yeah, but, you know, you're routined in safety and, you know, like safety is second nature to us. And
correct.
It goes very much to the safety training, I guess, which takes us back to our latest episode with Jakob and Philip from Siemens Gamesa as well, or Jakob from the GWO and Philip from Siemens Gamesa, where they spoke about safety training and the importance of that. And I think Kaz is living proof of what that training actually means in reality and how we are preparing the workforce to come home safely each day. I think it's a great, it was a really nice bookend to each part of the first half of the season.
Correct. And I genuinely liked both what Philip and Jakob had to say about the fact that people are trained with the hopes that this is something they will never use.
Yep.
And it is stuff that needs to be refreshed. It is experiences that thankfully will just fade away because you're doing it in a normal procedure. It's part of your everyday life and it's not something you ever need to use. And I think that's absolutely wonderful. And as you know, personally, I'm a huge advocate for safety. I don't want anybody to get hurt. And you know, as our Siemens Gamesa Offshore CEO, Mark Becker, wrote on one of his LinkedIn posts, he doesn't care who you work for in the wind industry, and neither do I. The important part is that everyone is safe and stays safe and keeps each other safe. And I genuinely mean this. I don't differentiate between anybody. Safety above all. I'll stop you, I'll help you, and I want you to do the same for me.
Great. I mean, and that's, you know, again, that's what the industry needs as an industry. We can't be petty when it comes to these things. If we move on to the other, we've got another couple of guests that talked about the US and the developments of the US, and also, so we had Doreen Harris from NYSERDA, and we also had Laura from the American Clean Power, and your head of the US offshore.
Yes, correct. Steve Daney is our head of offshore US. So yeah, we had actually a kind of a two-part episode featuring some of the Americans. So with Doreen, I thought it was absolutely also fascinating and really inspiring to hear how, from a New York State perspective, and not only on offshore wind, but also on generally on what they are doing with regards to renewables in one particular part of the U.S. and where they're going with that in her activities and her organization's activities in promoting and establishing the industry in the U.S.
Yeah, I think Doreen has a fascinating job, and I've watched NYSERDA and, you know, sort of grow over the course of the year. And I think that, you know, having Doreen in charge of this project and generating economic value for New York, I think it's fantastic. And I saw something after she was on the show where she was doing something for the solar industry as well. So, correct. I mean, she has a broad remit, and she's really committed to offshore wind. And so I think that's fantastic. I think that's fantastic for New York and the U.S. in general.
Yeah. And when Laura and Steve were talking about the growth and the perspective, and also the importance of regional collaboration in making sure that the different parts of the states and the U.S., that is, the different parts of the United States, are aware of the need to look beyond their own individual borders and to collaborate in a way that's beneficial for everybody is going to be super interesting to follow and to see how this cross state border develops, activities develop across the borders and so on.
Exactly. And then my personal favorite for this season, and it's only just because the Australian in me is just, I can't believe that stuff's happening down there, is speaking to Erin Coldham from Star of the South, where I think that it was great to hear what Australia is doing in offshore wind. You know, like, it's not necessarily, I wouldn't necessarily have pegged Australia as having a huge, you know, offshore wind demand, but, you know, it just seems to make sense in certain areas of Australia, and it seems to be something that's generating more and more mileage. And I think what I like most about it, of Star of the South, is it somehow becomes the analogy for the rest of the wind industry and so the rest of the emerging markets. You know, this project has been under development for many, many years, and it takes a long time. And it's, again, you know, we have to look at really accelerating these, you know, from technical potential into material in the water, if you don't want to call it steel in the water, material in the water. So if you, I think that this is a shining light about for what could be done. I mean, and the fact that, you know, we're talking about Star of the South, and it's probably not going to be installed this time, you know, before 2027, 2028, I think Erin was saying. So, yeah, that's a long lead time. And if we're talking about, you know, we need to get these gigawatts up to, you know, this 80 gigawatts year on year, it becomes pretty challenging, I think, to do this. And, you know, it just gives you some indication of some of the stuff that we have to really unlock here.
Agree, fully agree. And looking at that and being in the minority as far as nationalities were concerned on that episode with you and Erin. Yeah. It was really, really cool, I think, for me, not knowing a lot about Australia's, you know, geography and Gippsland and so on that you were talking about, and just being able to get a better grasp and understanding of another part of the world where offshore wind genuinely makes sense. Whether it's sooner or later, it's just, for me, definitely a question of time.
Great. Well, look, I think we should leave it here, David, for this episode. And again, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, it is actually summertime and I'm about to go off on summer vacation. So I'll be a different type of ocean user in a few days from now. I'll be trying to sun myself on a Danish beach somewhere, providing there is good sunshine luck. Or there is beaches to be able to do this on. But yeah. So what about yourself? Any plans for the summer?
Yeah, I do have some summer holiday here planned. Actually, some travel for the first time in a very, very, very long time. So it should be pretty interesting to see how that goes, a few days here and there. And so wishing a good winter break for our listeners in the Southern Hemisphere, whatever they might be having at this time.
Yeah.
So, should be pretty interesting, as well as when we pick it up again in the end of August,
exactly.
Early September.
Yep.
Or so, once we start doing the recordings again, looking very much forward to picking up some of the different topics we have planned, such as maritime spatial planning. We will be looking at some of the GWEC publications to come, as well as looking ahead, even in a further perspective, towards the hopefully first in-person event in Copenhagen in November, the Wind Europe Electric City.
Yep, fantastic. And so, listeners, once again, if you've like the episode, please rate us and subscribe and write a review and always get in contact with us. And for those people that have written to us so far, we really appreciate your feedback, particularly those that give little tips for how to improve the podcast's production values, which I'm taking note of and trying to fix as an ongoing concern. But so thanks for that. I very much appreciate that. So that's it for this first half of the season, and we'll see you after summer. Stay safe and look forward to hearing from you then.
Be well, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Offshore Wind Podcast, hosted by Stuart Mullen and David Lenti. We hope that you've learned something new today, and if you have any further questions, feel free to send an email to info@gwec.net. The Offshore Wind Podcast is powered by Siemens Gamesa Renewable Energy.